You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org. There's an app for that.
Right now, as we gather here in another part of the Capitol, there is a hearing. Five men are testifying on women's health. My colleague, Carolyn Maloney of New York, who is on the committee, looked down at this panel from which a woman who was the Democratic witness was excluded and said, where are the women? And that's a good question for the whole debate. Where are the women? Where are the women on that panel? Imagine they're having a panel on women's health and they don't have any women on the panel. Duh. What is it that men don't understand about women's health and how central the issue of family planning is to that?
That's House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi reacting to a group of male religious leaders who spoke at a hearing of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee against the Health and Human Services birth control mandate. And she asked that question, where are the women? Of course, there were some women, not on that panel, but on a different panel, so she was not being entirely honest in asking that question. You know, there's a presupposition there, and that is that only women can speak for women. And I think in Pelosi's case and in the case of the other reactions here, that only pro-choice women can speak for American women. Colleen Carol Campbell joins us to talk about that and another subject that is also near and dear to her heart. And we'll start with that subject, a recent anti-Catholic screed on the Huffington Post website, wherein the author says a number of things. He calls the Catholic Church a so-called church. He calls it a sect. He calls it a dangerous cult, a phony theology, and a cannibalistic revelry. He will not even qualify Roman Catholicism as Christian. And joining us to talk about it, Colleen Carol Campbell, host of a radio and television program called Faith and Culture, author of the book The New Faithful, and she also writes a biweekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Colleen, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Well, what, as a Catholic, offended you the most about what you saw in from Arianna Huffington and from the Huffington Post recently?
Well, where to begin? The piece that you're referencing was just full of every possible anti-Catholic stereotype and trope and some that I'd never seen before, just mocking everything from the Eucharist to belief in Christ's divinity, the Pope, and on and on. I thought it was actually just made the author look silly because it was so over the top offensive. But I think the thing maybe that troubled me about it the most was just that this was a response, allegedly, to Senator Rick Santorum's contention that he disagreed with President Obama's theology. He said, you know, I take him at his word that he's a Christian, but his theology isn't the theology that I you know, find in the Bible. And, you know, I think that's a valid critique. You don't have to agree with Santorum, and you can argue whether that, you know, particular critique was useful or relevant on the campaign trail. But the response of saying if you critique someone else's theology, then it's open season and you can put out every obscene, you know, insult against their religion that's ever been and that you can ever think of, it, you know, it's two different things. And so I think I was just surprised the Huffington Post printed it because they are a somewhat reputable outlet, obviously leaning left. But I was shocked that it made it through whatever filters are over there, and apparently there aren't many filters. So I think in the end it made the author look silly, and it really downgraded the Huff Post name, I thought.
Was it presented as satire?
Well, I was a little confused. I stumbled upon it some days kind of before the furor got going, and I just thought that's what it was. In fact, I was waiting for the line at the end that would say, this was an over-the-top, perhaps unnecessarily offensive way to explain, you know, what I think about anti-Catholic bigots, but unfortunately that line never came, and apparently the author was his whole point, he said, was, again, to shame Santorum and anyone else who might criticize President Obama's theology or his actions based on what he says is his interpretation of, you know, Christian doctrine. And so apparently if you criticize someone else's interpretation of the Bible, then it's, again, open season, and you can be obscene and offensive and all the rest of it in retaliation for that. So, you know, the two were not at all on the same level and not at all parallel. Obviously, there's free speech. This man can write whatever he wants. But again, I was rather surprised that a mainstream outlet would reprint it. And I did think it was satire, and I'm not exactly sure what it was.
So has there even been a whisper of an apology or much less a retraction?
I haven't followed it very closely, but from what I understand, when there was an uproar, the author then responded by writing another piece saying, "I'm not going to apologize in the least for this." So it doesn't sound like it. I think this is the disaffected Catholic himself who, you know, feels he has the right to be more offensive than any other critic of the church because he once was part of it, something along those lines, which unfortunately isn't completely rare, although the level of vitriol in this particular piece is unusual.
Do you think it reflects a more general, perhaps a more subtle anti-Catholic bigotry in the media?
I think it does. And that's probably why I'm not as incensed about pieces like this, because they're so obviously obscene, immature, you know, senseless, that you can kind of shrug them off. But although I do think there, you wouldn't see a piece like this mocking Islam in this way on the Huffington Post. I think that's worth noting. But I do think the more subtle forms of anti-Catholic bigotry are more troubling and obviously more pervasive, and I think we've seen a lot of them show up in this debate over the contraception mandate pushed by President Obama. You know, a lot of pretty nasty cartoons, editorial asides, and all the rest of them. Again, you know, this is the land of free speech. You can say what you want, but it has sort of shown the true colors of many elites in the mainstream media in terms of how they regard the Catholic Church, constantly fixating on the fact that the priesthood is an all-male institution, and therefore, you know, there are no women, obviously, who share the point of view of the Catholic Church on this contraception mandate, because we all know that the Pope is a man and priests are men, and therefore, ergo, you know, women are completely unrepresented by the teachings of the Catholic Church, which is, of course, bogus. But, you know, you don't hear a lot of actual mass-going, observant Catholic women quoted in stories that kind of push this, because I think the women who are actually actively involved in the church and who are actually attending Mass and paying attention to church teachings often have a very different view than the one that's presented in the mainstream media. And so it doesn't work to call this a patriarchal institution when you've got women standing up and defending that institution as well. And therefore, we don't hear much from those women in mainstream media reports.
Well, you have written about this more generally very recently in you simply have one favor to ask of the mainstream media. Don't lump us all together, speaking, of course, as a woman. What do you mean?
What I mean is that in the last month or so, something has come to the head, which, you know, has troubled a lot of us for a long time, but it particularly irritated me in the last month watching the coverage of the controversies like the Komen for the Cure Foundation's short-lived decision to defund Planned Parenthood, of course, the uproar over Obama's contraception mandate, and then more recently, this ultrasound bill that recently passed in Virginia. And in each of these stories, big hot-button stories where Americans are fiercely divided, we have heard over and over again in mainstream media reports that women want X. You know, the women's view of this issue is this: women versus the Catholic bishops, women versus Neanderthal Republicans, women versus the pro-life community. You know, women versus versus those who would defund Planned Parenthood. When in fact, the reality is on all of these issues, women are divided, and it's often women who are some of the most vociferous critics of the Obama administration and the abortion rights advocates on these issues. And yet, constantly in these stories, we hear, you know, Cecil Richards, president of Planned Parenthood and women's advocate. You know, well, she's not my advocate. She doesn't speak for me any more than Sarah Palin speaks for her. And yet, we're all lumped together. And I think it's a very convenient thing because it allows those who already want to push the narrative that anyone who opposes abortion on demand or government-mandated contraception coverage, anyone who opposes those things is obviously also opposing women. And it gets a little murky when you have to admit that actually a lot of women also oppose those things. And so it's easier just to ignore those dissenting voices and to pretend that all women think the same and that they're all represented by people like former now President Kim Gandy, who's called abortion on demand an essential women's right the other day when discussing the Virginia ultrasound bill. And of course, we've heard over-the-top language on the ultrasound bill in particular. But in all of these cases, we hear from quote-unquote women's groups that are in fact nothing more than abortion rights groups, and they should be labeled as such.
Colleen Carroll Campbell is our guest. When we come back, 10 more minutes with her.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Welcome back. We're answering the question, Who Speaks for American Women, with Colleen Carroll Campbell of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I'm Todd Wilkin. Colleen, you mentioned before Kim Gandy and the other pro-choice women leaders who, I can understand the tactic of wanting to present yourself, if you're a pro-choice group, as representing all or most American women. I understand that as kind of a political and media tactic. But regarding the media coverage of it, do you think this is just a journalistic blind spot?
I think it's a lot of things. I mean, if you look at studies from 1980 on tracking the political and religious leanings of mainstream media elites, we're talking the reporters and commentators at the nation's top newspapers and television networks, consistently they have shown that upwards of 90% don't believe in God, say that their political leanings are quite liberal, and on. They're pretty out of step with mainstream diverse America, where some people are liberal, some are conservative, some are in the middle. That doesn't describe journalistic elites. So that's one piece of it. I mean, they just simply are more sympathetic to the abortion rights activists than they are to pro-life women or to those concerned about First Amendment issues in this contraception debate instead of those concerned about free birth control. So that's one aspect of it. Another is just the groupthink that takes hold in a lot of newsrooms. I mean, I've worked in a newsroom, a couple of them, and, you know, there tends to be a laziness. You're busy. You're on deadline. Let's just call the usual suspects. We got Planned Parenthood president on speed dial. Let's call her instead of trying to beat the bushes and find a pro-life feminist. Now, we know that, in fact, you don't have to beat the bushes to find women who disagree with this contraception mandate, for instance. A recent Gallup poll found that women are evenly divided. In fact, just 1% more actually back the religious leaders in this dispute than back Obama. But they're virtually split right in half, American women, on this contraception mandate, as are American men. But you would never know that from the coverage, again, because it's just easier to quote the usual suspects who claim to speak for all women. And they certainly speak for some women, so it makes you feel as if you've checked off the women's perspective, when in fact you've only checked off one woman's perspective, and there's another one out there that speaks for probably another nearly 50% of American women or more that isn't being heard. So it's laziness, it is a blind spot, and then sometimes it's something more sinister of simply, you know, they want the other side to win, and they want to present things in a way that makes groups like the pro-life movement or the Catholic Church look less reasonable than they actually are.
Well, here's kind of a puzzler, because I kind of read this from a male perspective, and I think to myself, I never suffer this frustration that you, as a conservative woman, must suffer, because I don't know of anyone who stands up and says, I represent the men of America. Why is it that women, especially left-leaning women, this doesn't happen to men, Colleen. It simply doesn't. No one claims to do that. Why do women have this problem and not men?
Well, it's a very good point, and it's when you put it that way, you can see how ridiculous it really is that people like Cecil Richards would stand up and say, here I am speaking on behalf of all women, or Nancy Pelosi the other week saying, where are the women, describing a Republican-led hearing on the contraception mandate, ignoring, of course, the two women who were testifying the very day she was complaining there were no women involved. And the two women who, I might add, a doctor and a lawyer, were far more credentialed than the university student Democrats put up to make their case. I think you don't hear it because I think it is a vestige of sexism. I think it is a very narrow way to look at women. And I think the very establishment, the feminist establishment, that should be the ones challenging this, that establishment is kind of turning a blind eye because it serves it well. You know, this is exactly the kind of thing that were this another issue and this were somehow cutting against the grain of the establishment feminist, agenda, we would be hearing, feminists up in arms and how dare you talk about the women's perspective. We are diverse. We have so many different opinions. And so increasingly what you're hearing are conservative women standing up and making that case. And it's a very reasonable case, so it resonates. And I think it's about time. I mean, even the very label feminist, who's to say that, again, Kim Gandier now defines what feminism is? If you look back to Susan B. Anthony, who was pro-life, one of the early American feminists, if you stack her up next to a Kim Gandier or a Richards or a Nancy Pelosi, she'd probably have a lot of quibbles with them and pretty big ones, and certainly abortion being one of the top areas where she thought that was an affront to women's dignity, that she saw it as something that unscrupulous men promoted to try to get off the hook for the children that they fathered. So there are all different ways to look at these issues, and unfortunately we're just not seeing that diversity represented in mainstream media coverage. The good news is with the advent of the Internet, we're seeing other ways for women to get their voices heard when they're not getting heard in the media echo chamber.
One more question there, and that is, we do know that women who are pro-life are trending younger and younger, that essentially the pro-life movement, when it comes to its female population, is getting younger and younger. Do you anticipate some kind of reverse effect from the media echo chamber here where these young women say, look, I am not being represented in the media? That woman doesn't speak for me. And with that demographic trend, kind of a reverse effect for what the parties involved in this are trying to accomplish.
Well, I think that's certainly possible. I mean, it's a very hopeful sign how many young women are, in fact, pro-life. There are other social issues on which, the trends are not as positive. But it's certainly true that I think there's more and more challenge to this storyline of here is Now, here is Planned Parenthood, here is NARAL. These are the three groups that now speak for all American women. I mean, in their own ranks, and many of the leaders of these groups have publicly said, we just don't have the young women. We're just not getting them. We're looking at the March for Life, and we're horrified by these throngs and throngs of young people and, yes, young women who are very staunchly pro-life. I think this narrative is going to continue to be challenged. And as I said, with the Internet, with blogs, with alternative media, it's getting more and more difficult to hold up this storyline. Years ago, the gatekeepers at the major newspapers and networks, they really made the difference as to what arguments you heard in the public square, but it's just not working anymore. And I think that scares these establishment abortion rights groups to death because they know they don't really have the numbers to make the claims they're making. And their enablers in the mainstream media no longer have the power they had to construct the narrative to make all women look as if they support abortion rights. And polls consistently show that young women are, as you said, trending pro-life. So, I think the future is looking brighter and brighter for the pro-life movement especially. But, you know, it's a continual battle. I think that women need to make their voices heard, even in smaller local markets, writing letters to the editor, you know, blogging, just making sure, even around the water cooler at work, that people know just because you're a woman doesn't mean your only, you know, fixation in life is to try to get yourself some free birth control pills at the expense of the First Amendment.
Colleen Carroll Campbell is host of a radio and television program called Faith and Culture. She's author of the book, The New Faithful, and she writes a biweekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You can read her columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Colleen, keep up the good work.
Thanks a lot.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Dr. Alan Carlson of the Howard Center about American evangelicals and birth control. Monday, we'll study the Lenten hymn, A Lamb Goes Uncomplaining Forth, with Pastor Will Whedon of St. Paul Lutheran Church in Hamel, Illinois. I'm holding in my hand a book that, if I recall my childhood, there was a book like this. Well, it was kind of like this. It was a book of children's songs. What makes this book different, it's actually a children's hymnal. You open it up, and it is laid out just like a hymnal. Now, it doesn't have the rather long and complicated liturgies that you would find in a regular Lutheran hymnal, but it does have home devotions that are suited just for children in the home. It has prayers, and that's how it begins. It even has a little confession and absolution, and then it has the hymns of the church for children. They are pared down so that children don't learn 10 stanzas, maybe only three, but they are the hymns of the church nonetheless. They're beautifully presented in a very, very good book that every parent, every grandparent should have. It's called My First Hymnal from Concordia Publishing House. You can find out more about it, browse before you buy, at our website, issuesetc.org. It is the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March. March is now upon us. You can also call and order My First Hymnal. I know that my congregation, I think a week ago or so, dedicated a stack of these hymnals for the children of the congregation, gave them to the parents of small children in the congregation. Your congregation might think about doing something like that. Concordia Publishing House's number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.